Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hey guys, I'm Maddie Orlando.
And I'm Lauren Orlando.
As you probably guessed, we're sisters.
And we're also co-hosts of the podcast, The Sister Diary.
Every week, we let our listeners into real-life conversations like the ones that we have at home.
We have an 8-year age gap, so we always have a different perspective on things, but that makes it pretty fun.
We talk about navigating life, growing up on social media, and pretty much anything else that we find interesting.
You can catch a new episode of The Sister Diary every Friday.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together. All right, y'all. Well, today we are recapping once again, but we are going back into 2019. Now, this was the most listened to podcast episode and probably the one that maybe shocked me the most about my own body. Now, maybe it was popular because it had a really catchy title, because this one is all about vaginas. We brought on the vagina coach, Kim, and she blew my mind all about what happens with a woman's body, heck, is pelvic floor anything, and the fact that so many of us are doing Kegels wrong, and that there's so much that we can learn about our own bodies that actually change our entire lives. So many of us are existing and living with common things that we think are just part of life, especially after having children, or as you get older, things like peeing a little bit when you sneeze, or peeing a little bit when you go on a trampoline, or different types of pains and hangups. And to know that not only is it not normal, but it's actually something that we can repair, was just one of the most transformative conversations I've ever had. Now, going into having another baby, which at this point, while you're listening, I don't know if she's here or not, but it's one of those things we got to go back on, and I got to listen to again, and I have to replay all of those messages so that this time, this postpartum, everything will be different, and that my pelvic floor hopefully will be able to recover quicker and better and more effectively by some of the advice that we learned today. So have a good listen, enjoy it. Honestly, it was popular for a reason, and that's why I'm so excited to bring it back to refresh that conversation, or perhaps you've never heard it before. And yeah, let's talk about our dang vaginas. Or if you're a male listener or whatever, you can also just learn about our vaginas. And I feel like that's also equally important. I mean, whatever, right? So let's get into the show and hope you enjoy, and we'll see you next week. All right, everyone, welcome back. I am sitting in a hotel. I've lured another guest into a hotel room. This is like my classic move now, but I am in kind of dreary Vancouver, but it was a little bit sunny today. And I'm really, really excited about this next guest. We kind of connected because we're both going to the same conference tomorrow, which is the Mompreneurs Conference. And she is a mompreneur that I think you are going to love to get to know. I am stupidly excited for you to meet. Please meet Kim, the vagina coach. Well, I guess you're just vagina coach. It's not the, but still.
The doesn't matter.
You're a vagina coach.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but that's like the coolest title I think anybody's ever gotten to walk around and claim.
Yeah, it actually started because of the Mompreneur Conference, actually, now that I think about it. Yeah.
Okay, like tell that. Like tell how this, how does one become a vagina coach? I'm a little jealous. If I could have an excuse to talk about vaginas all day.
Thinking that I was going to become a vagina coach.
In your high school?
Yeah.
In your high school thing, what do you aspire to be?
I'm going to be, no. It was accidentally on purpose, as I say, and... So it started because I was afraid of tearing in childbirth. That's really what started it all. My mom had issues. So growing up, I was fascinated with childbirth. I saw a birth video in grade 6 and I thought, oh my God, I'm never doing that. And then I thought, well, my mom did it and other women did it and people are carrying on. So it must not be that bad. And when I was talking to my mom, she did have challenges. So she had chronic back pain. She had a tummy that she was never happy with. She had a leaky bladder. So I noticed that gradually she stopped doing some of her activities. She used to run every morning. She was always very active and then started to kind of phase that out. She had surgery in her 50s. And so growing up, I kind of felt like, I'm not going to do this. I like my body as it is. I don't want it to get ruined. And so that was my life. And then when I decided I did want to have children, what changed that was I watched my sister-in-law give birth. And that was, you know, from me to where we're sitting, like you were my sister-in-law and I'm watching this. And I remember walking in the room going, oh my God, that's a big vagina. Like I'd never seen birth that way before. And it was inspiring. And she used midwives and she had no tearing. And so she had a completely different story than what my mom had and what I kind of pictured birth to be. And then I thought, okay, I think I'd met my husband and we wanted a family. So I said, I can do this. So the next year I was pregnant and I remember asking my midwives, you know, I really want to have a different story than my mom. What can I do? And they had told me about perineal massage, which is something my sister-in-law had done as well.
When I first heard about perineal massage, I was 19 or no, I was 20. And I remember telling people about it, but I kept calling it perineal massage. Yeah. And they're like, that's a garden, Sarah. That's not your vagina. And I was like, I've repeated this to probably 20 people who have not corrected me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time.
Can you explain what that is for those who don't know?
Yeah. So the perineum is the area between it's skin. It's an area between the vagina and the anus. And it's very, very prone, very, very common to have tearing. It used to be common that they would actually cut that tissue and it was called an episiotomy or
I've
it
had
still
one.
Is. Yes, okay. Lots of people still do.
But mine was to the side.
Most of them are.
Okay.
It used to be standard, you know, in my mom's day, everybody had one because they thought that it would make it easier. They thought, well, if we just create more space for the baby, it'll be easier for mom and babe. But it was creating... almost like it started the path for tearing. So people were having more severe injuries and it was more painful to heal from. And so it's challenging. And so they told me about that. And then I was doing more investigation and they had said, and I've also heard about this product called the Epino. And the Epino is a biofeedback device. It's like a balloon that you put in your vagina and it gradually inflates and it creates sensations of stretch and pressure and discomfort. So trying to mimic what you're going to feel in birth.
Oh, cool.
And then you have to learn how to relax, but it's also doing the perineal massage for you.
Interesting.
And so I used one of these and had a great experience. And at the end I thought, oh my God, like, why is this not something that every single woman
uses? I've never even heard of it before.
Yeah. And it should be. Anyway, so that's what started it all. So I contacted the company. They're a German manufacturer. And I said, can I be a distributor in Canada? And they said yes. And so it started very easily.
Yeah.
And my intention wasn't for it to be a business. I just thought I would sell a few on the side.
Yeah.
I had worked in fitness and then got out of it and I was working in HR. And then long story short, in 2009, I was laid off. And just before that, I had been saying, you know, I wish I could be at home more with my kids. Mm-hmm. My husband travels a lot. He's a pilot. I didn't have any family because we had just moved to Ontario. And so I was feeling like I wanted to be at home with my kids and have something to do. And so I thought I'll turn this into something. And I was going to give myself a year to grow it. And then I was laid off. So I thought, okay, here we go.
Now's the time.
Yeah.
You're kicked out of the nest.
That's kind of how it started. And then I started very much with pregnancy as the main goal, like helping people prevent pelvic floor challenges while they're still pregnant. That was the theme.
Okay.
And then I met two other women and we started a second business called Bellies Inc. And we manufacture a postpartum recovery garment.
I saw that. That's really cool, actually, because a lot of people deal with like muscle tearing in their stomach area and just like a really hard. And I think what's difficult is that we've come into this day and age where like waist trainers are a thing and that's not what this is. This is
totally.
This is like a more compression to help heal the uterus.
Yeah,
like
and it's even more,
back, right?
That's part of it. So the base layer tank top provides a little bit of compression, but really the wrap is more so what I find to be the most valuable, and it actually supports more the pelvis. So the intention behind it is when the muscles in the abdominal wall and the pelvic floor are stretched beyond their optimal length, when any muscle is stretched beyond its optimal length, it is hindered in its capacity to contract and to use its full force.
Right.
So in the early weeks postpartum, the body, the ability to provide core control and stability is not as effective. And so the wrap really provides a bit of it's almost like a crutch, and it's temporarily providing external support while the building happens, while the retraining happens of exercise for the internal support.
Okay.
So really we started building that business, and then yada yada, I moved back to Vancouver. And the way that the vagina coach, this is a long story to tell you how.
I'm still here for it. I like this.
So when I was speaking at the Mompreneur Conference, which is what we're here for here, my talk was called How Optimizing Your Pelvic Floor Can Make You a Better Mompreneur. Mm. And there had been several talks through the day.
Now that's a segue.
many people were talking about marketing coach or business, whoever. There was many different types of business coaches. And so I just walked onto stage and I said, and now you've got a vagina coach for your business. And it just kind of came out of my mouth. And I was like, oh my God,
that's so good.
That so sums up. Because I had moved away from pregnancy as the only thing. And it kind of was, moving into after and even into menopause. And I used to be called the fitness doula. And that just didn't describe what I did completely anymore.
Of course.
And so that was I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago when I had that kind of light bulb. And so that's how that happened.
That's incredible. Now I'm going to tell you my story because this is why I'm so fascinated by you and what you do. So I was 20 when I got pregnant. I had never even seen my vagina right up until post-delivery. Mm-hmm. Like I'd never seen myself, never took a mirror to it. I remember in delivery, I had midwives and they said, do you want to see a mirror? And I was like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I think they thought it would help me with my pushing. And at that time, if you had an epidural, you lost your midwives as your primary care and a GP had to come in, or an OB, sorry. And so the OB had come in the room, but there was another woman having a baby around the same time. And she was running out of time to do both. Mm-hmm. And I remember the look on the midwives' faces when this OB made the call, we're doing an episiotomy. And I was completely numb. I didn't feel it. I heard the cutting of my skin and a baby was out. And I didn't really think much past that. So then all of a sudden the next day, pain kind of came, and it came so furiously and so bad. And I remember just looking at my midwives and saying what can I have? And they're like, you can have a Tylenol or an Advil. Mm-hmm. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like I was stitched. I don't even know how many stitches. It was a lot. Mm-hmm. My first baby was 9 pounds and it was so traumatic on my 21-year-old body. Mm-hmm. And I remember going home. And I was so ashamed to still talk about my body and all these different things. And the midwives were really they made me comfortable and they made me confident in a way, but I still was super, super terrified. Mm-hmm. So 6 weeks down the line, my stitches have not released yet. I'm not even able to pee. The only way I was able to pee was to sit into a bath and pee with Epsom salts. It was all just so painful and so scary. And I just was so focused on this baby that I didn't know quite what else to do. Finally, we realized that there was some form of an infection and that had to be treated. A year later, I finally stopped feeling daily pain.
Yeah.
Every time I stood up, it was painful. The entire process, I thought I would never have children again because it was so horrific. By the time my daughter was one, about a week later, I was pregnant with my second. And I had a completely different experience. I had a midwife with me the entire time, and she knew my entire fear, similar to you with your mother. I was so scared of tearing. Mm-hmm. That's all I could think about was, I can't go through another year of this. I can't, with a baby and trying to do all these things. I don't know how to do this. And she massaged that baby out. Mm-hmm. And I walked out without any stitches. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is what childbirth was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be trauma for a year. Eventually, then I had my son 2 years later, and I was in Ottawa at this time. They didn't have midwives up there. So back to an OB. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, tore in a different spot, but tour again.
Yep.
And I was just like this, holy crap, it could be such a great experience. And it can be so horrific depending on who, like, I guess even just the level of just awareness around, like, I remember
exactly,
looking
the
at
knowledge.
The, right. And so with the OB in Ottawa, I remember saying like, I've had an episiotomy, like it was all happening really, really fast. And I said, I've had an episiotomy the last time they had to massage the baby so that I didn't tear because mm-hmm. there's quite a bit of scar tissue there. Mm-hmm. And they looked at me and they said, oh no, we don't touch you. And I was like, what? I just remember being like the fear just overcame me again. So that one, it wasn't so bad. It was only a couple stitches. But flash forward about 4 years ago, I got onto a trampoline with my kids. You know, I'm all healed. I'm
it's
done having
the trampoline.
Babies. The damn trampoline. And I peed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the hell was that? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't like ashamed of it. I ended up like telling a bunch of people and like joking about it online and stuff. And people were like, you realize that's an issue. You shouldn't have that happening to you. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. That? What do you mean? They're like, no, that's a pelvic floor thing. You should be retraining your body. Like there's stuff that you can do. And I've still not done it. Mm-hmm. But it fascinates me that I am 9 years postpartum. Almost 10 years postpartum. It's been almost 14 years since I've given birth for the first time. And I'm now just understanding that there mm-hmm. is stuff that could have been done and prevented before I had kids
totally.
And all the way after I had kids. And now I just find it like, holy crap, this is something that needs to be talked about. We need to put mirrors to our vaginas and we need to have conversations about them.
Totally. And wouldn't it's so it crazy. Like the knowledge piece and the awareness is we are in a position of power when we know and when we can make decisions based on the information that we have. And as it stands, as what you just said with your story, which is very, very typical, is people go in thinking, okay, well, the doctor's here. They must yeah. know. I'm just going to trust this. And that's fine. You want to have a trust.
Yeah.
But there are so many things that women don't know and mm-hmm. they aren't told. And if they had been, it could change their birth experience. It could change their recovery and actually make them focus on recovery. Because I feel like that's a really overlooked piece of childbirth in our North American culture, which is right. very, very much of who can get back to the gym fastest, who can yeah. get into, who can not look pregnant the quickest, which I find it funny, especially in the kind of the social media driven world that we have, where as soon as somebody's pregnant, every day there's, you know, a picture of now it's the size of a cantaloupe or an avocado or whatever vegetable it is. The belly is revered through the whole pregnancy. And as soon as the baby is born, it becomes a place of shame and we need to hide it. And we have to make sure that nobody thinks we look pregnant anymore. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just so,
yeah, that's so true.
Backwards. And so when we were talking about the wrap earlier, mm-hmm. it's also interesting because in the kind of the body positive movement, it is sometimes looked at as a waist trainer or as a,
right.
oh, you're just trying to get to shame women and make them feel like they need to flatten their abs after, which
no.
is like so completely opposite to right. what we designed our product for. But it's interesting. And I wish that really my whole, when I first started this whole kind of mission, it was really from a preventive perspective to get yeah. women informed. If you go into your pregnancy and your recovery with more information and with a plan for recovery and with knowledge of pelvic floor physiotherapy,
exactly.
which should be something that every woman has, mm-hmm. especially women that go through pregnancy and birth, and it should be paid for by our government, really.
Right. And you know what, too, like coming back to the point in terms of like the body positive stuff, you know, I've had this debate before when people talk about stretch mark creams, and I'm like, I still believe to this day, if there was something out there that could prevent them, they were painful. Mm-hmm. They should have been prevented. If there's something that you can do in your aftercare that enables your body to retract and be stronger in the long run, mm-hmm. that's probably something that we should endorse. But if you haven't been able to do that, or you didn't do that, or you tried and things didn't work, whatever, it's not shame inducing on either side. But when there are tools in place to support women, like mm-hmm. we do need to kind of get behind those things. And it's
totally.
Not the same category as the other things. But I'm curious too, do you have any clients who are not in the pregnancy and postpartum world?
1,000%.
Really?
Most people are not in where I am
really?
Now.
Really?
Yeah.
So what is your main, like, what do a lot of people come for you? Because the one thing you were talking about, you said how like my story is like a typical story. What I find fascinating is like, these things are common, but they mm-hmm. shouldn't be normal.
Right.
And I love that you're doing clients before they even come into that. Cause mm-hmm. I think it's such a disservice that we've done to our bodies where we're just like, I'm freaked out by my vagina. Therefore I'm not going to talk about it or look at it or
totally.
Ask questions.
Yep. Yeah. And so it's a place of, for some, it's a place of shame. For some,
right.
it's a place of they're uncomfortable or they think it's taboo.
Yeah.
Even from a self-pleasure perspective, they feel like that's maybe not something they should talk about or even explore or do. So it's kind of a part of the body where you don't really pay attention to it unless right. there's something that's not working. You know, you mentioned pain. Obviously, pain is something that will bring your attention there a lot all the right. time, and, mm-hmm. and that's hard to let go. But or if you're experiencing incontinence, or if you're experiencing prolapse where you, yep. you feel like there's something in your vagina all the time, then you're gonna be aware of it, and it's gonna probably overtake a lot of your thoughts because the pelvic floor, the core is so central to so many things that we do yeah. in our life. But most people, I'd say the two most common things are incontinence and prolapse. So
what's prolapse?
Prolapse occurs where, so in the female body, we have a bladder and a uterus and a rectum.
Okay.
And if you can imagine, the listeners won't be able to see this and I won't completely demonstrate it, but if you can imagine putting your arm through your sweatshirt arm okay. and hold it up. So pretend that sweatshirt arm is your vagina.
Yeah.
And at the top, so where your hand would be poking out, would be your cervix and your uterus.
Right.
And on one side would be your bladder, so the anterior wall of the yep. vagina. And then on the back side would be your rectum, so that would be the posterior part of your vagina.
Right.
And a prolapse occurs when one or sometimes all of those organs start to shift out of their optimal position and
gotcha.
Either descend into or bulge into the vagina. So if the rectum bulges into the vagina, it's called a rectocele.
Okay.
If the bladder bulges into the anterior wall of the vagina, it's called a cystocele. And if the uterus starts to descend into the vagina, that would be a uterine prolapse. Those are the three most common.
Interesting. And those things can happen without childbirth and...
1,000%.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think I've just only heard about it when it's like a postpartum thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because when I was starting to talk about the mm-hmm. epi no more, like this is 15 years ago, and I started meeting with doctors. And I remember being in this one meeting with a doctor and his son, who was also a doctor.
Yeah.
And the two of them were, he's one of the leading, he's head of maternal and fetal medicine at Sunnybrook, maybe.
Okay.
He's a very well-renowned, known doctor. And I was in the meeting with him and they were very supportive of the Epino, which I was super excited to have because medical is usually a little more hesitant
yeah,
on stuff like
of
that.
Of course.
And I remember him and his son having a conversation. And they asked me, I was very new to this. And in my mm-hmm. world, really all I knew about at the time was incontinence.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, you know, if somebody had a cystocele, would they be able to use this? And I was trying to be all professional. And in my head, I'm like, what the fuck is a cystocele?
That's what I'm doing right now. Like, what the hell is that?
And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go home and I'll search that up. But so I had never heard of prolapse before.
Gotcha.
And then it became something that obviously I was talking about more, the more I spoke with physios and other doctors
right.
and started to learn about. And that can sometimes almost be more common than the incontinence piece. Like almost 50% of women have some degree of prolapse. And in the early weeks postpartum, I think it's like 83 or 84% of women usually have a stage one or stage two, which usually will resolve, not always.
Yeah.
But again, back to the knowledge and the informed piece, if women know about that, if they know about pelvic floor physio, if they're mm-hmm. getting assessed and checked, and if they know that they have an early stage prolapse, then they would potentially, when you're informed, you make informed choices.
Of course, you become a better advocate for yourself.
Totally.
You know,
so maybe you
for.
Don't go back to your to that fitness class as soon
yeah.
as possible, or maybe you are more motivated to see physio.
Yeah.
Maybe you understand the importance of restoring and resting and retraining
right.
your core. But for some women who have no idea, they get their 6-week green light. They go back, you know, kind of from 0 to 60.
Mm-hmm.
And if things haven't fully restored or repositioned, and then they're adding that load, the demands
yeah.
of jumping and what have you, then that can sometimes set them up for some challenges. And then I hear all the time, I wish somebody had told me about that.
I guess that's one of my big questions too, is what is it actually, what are the symptoms of a prolapse? Because if so many people are suffering from them and we don't even know that that technically is going on, what is something that potentially somebody would be like, oh, maybe that's something I should go check out. Like, what are those symptoms? Are they very obvious or are they subtle? Like for me, like the whole peeing myself, like I was just like, well, it's because I have had kids. Like that's the end of that story.
Yeah.
Didn't
yeah.
really even think anything more to it. But yeah, for both kinds of all three kinds of prolapses, what would kind of be the symptoms for those?
So early stage prolapse can often be asymptomatic. So usually in North America, prolapse are usually graded 1, 2, 3, 4, whereas 1 is very early stage and 4 would be where it's actually, if you can picture a woman, it kind of looks like a scrotum. Like if you picture a bulge out of your vagina, that would be a stage 4.
So you would probably know that that's happening.
You would definitely know that's happening.
Know.
But early stage, like stage 1 and 2, often you have no idea. Or sometimes the symptoms might be back pain, or they might just kind of be a kind of a little tugging sensation that you would associate maybe with ovulation, or maybe you just hurt yourself. You worked out too hard or something. So because, and this is like one of my big soapboxes, is that every woman should see a pelvic floor physiotherapist every single year, even if you have no symptoms, for your entire life. Like we go to the dentist, you know, like we have all this
I've
other
preventive
maintenance.
I've never been to one. I need to, apparently. What does that look, what does that look like when you go? Like, is it a physical exam? Is it a questionnaire?
Yeah.
So they can actually examine you and like make sure things are.
Yeah. So pelvic floor physios are regular physiotherapists that are, have additional training, and they are licensed to go internally. Mm. And they will do, they have all the other skills that other physios do. So they will have an external exam. They look at posture. They look at movement. That you do go through a very extensive questionnaire, like health screen. And then usually assessments last for about an hour the first time. And it's externally. So they will look at the genitalia. They will look for if there is any scar tissue. They'll look to see how mobile it is, if it's really stuck. And then they will go, usually with one, sometimes two gloved fingers, they will insert those into the vagina. And what they're checking for is tone. So they will...
The tone of your vagina?
The tone. Like, yeah, like we have tone in our body. So is the tone
in my
equal?
Voice. What is the tone of my vagina?
Is it an angry tone or is it...
That'd be so funny. I'm such a child.
You have an angry vagina. Yeah. But you kind of can have it. I would think an angry vagina could be like a very tight, very like a lot of too much tone over... Overtoned. Hypertonic, basically, that would be
I thought that was the goal.
That's what everybody thinks. Well, I want a really tight, hypertoned vagina.
Honestly, even my mom said when she gave birth, the doctor looked at her and was like, do you want us to add an extra stitch for your husband?
Oh, God.
Like, oh, my gosh.
That's such a terrible, like...
Sorry, mom, for telling that story about your vagina. I don't even know if you got the stitch.
Yeah, they call it the husband stitch, which
Which
oftentimes it's... It is a huge source of pain for women going forward. But he's thinking only about the pleasure of the man, not nothing to do with the woman.
So a tight vagina could be an angry vagina.
Could be.
Could be.
It could be. And that we're just kind of half joking there. But so they're assessing for, is there a balance? Like does one, does one side, is there more give on the other side? And is one side really rigid or is it fairly balanced? And then they will assess, can you do a Kegel? So they want to assess the contract.
Whoa, I called it
the
Kegels
lift.
Forever. Is
Kegel,
it Kegels?
Kegel, tomato, tomato. It's okay. Doesn't matter. Okay. Whew. You're okay.
Like how many times have I said that word wrong?
I interchange them. Usually I say Kegel more often, but Kegel, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Kegel, Kegel. So a true Kegel, Kegel is a contraction. So there's like a squeeze, a hug. And then there should be a lift, like a drawing up and in. And then there needs to be the letting go. And if you have somebody who has, you know, quote unquote, as we were talking, an angry vagina or a really kind of hypertone vagina, the contraction may not be felt, not because there isn't the ability, but it's like there isn't as much ability left. So if you imagine, say I walked around with in a bicep curl, I was carrying a bag of groceries all day long and my arm was partially flexed most of the day. By the end of that day, my arm, even by like an hour later, my arm is going to be sore and tired. And if I was going to have to be lifting something heavier or more again, my arm would be like, no, I have nothing more to give. So the same thing happens in the floor. If the pelvic floor muscles are held in a kind of chronically tense or overcontracted state for the majority of the time, then they lose their ability to generate power. That's one of the ways that leaking can happen. So when a sneeze comes, they're just like, sorry, I can't manage it.
So in terms of like incontinence, because I feel like it gets normalized for women who, as they age, can it be preventative or is that just something that will naturally happen as you age?
No.
And if you already are so far gone that you are having incontinence with your bladder, can you heal from it?
Yes.
Even at an older age?
Yes. 1,000%. Yes.
Mom, I hope you're listening.
Yes.
She talks about this all the time too.
Totally. And pelvic floor muscle training is, again, I have to remember, it's about 83%, I think. So studies show that pelvic floor muscle training is 83% effective in curing, like not just helping reduce, but curing incontinence.
Wow.
So if you see a physio and you learn properly how to perform a proper Kegel.
Yeah.
And so making sure that if you do have a hypertonic vagina, so one that is holding more tension.
Why? That sounds like such a goal. I'm like, I want a hypertonic vagina.
No, you don't because...
I know, but it sounds awesome. Just sounds like it's like super powered.
Totally. Yeah, that's true. Actually, it does sound like a superpower. But so if you have too much tone, then things like sex can be painful. Inserting a tampon could be painful.
Right.
Moving could be painful. Releasing your bladder might not be as effective. So if you can't relax your pelvic floor muscles, the bladder can't contract and empty properly. True. So the goal isn't to, if you don't have enough tone, the goal is to increase tone. If you have too much tone, the goal is to release some tone.
Balance it out, essentially.
You have to balance. Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question because I'm a huge fan of menstrual cups. I've talked about it many times. I've used Diva Cup for years. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, someone will come to me and say, I use the Diva Cup. However, I put it in and it falls out. Like it goes all the way down. It's like pushing out. It won't hold in. Mm-hmm. What is that an indication of? Potentially.
A couple things. So it could be that there isn't enough tone to hold. So they would need to work on strengthening the pelvic floor muscles. Okay. So that could be one. The other could be, so when, especially when we talk about prolapse, there's something called intra-abdominal pressure. And we always have and we need intra-abdominal pressure. It's part of our stability and our control system.
Okay.
But when we aren't able to manage pressures, so pressures are standing up from a chair, laughing, coughing, jumping, exerting some force will increase intra-abdominal pressure.
Right.
And if we, for whatever reason, lose our capacity or our ability to manage that, then things like leaking happen or back pain or diastasis, the bulging in the abdominal wall can happen. So when the pressure goes down on the pelvic floor, that pushes the organs down as well. So that can be a contributor to prolapse.
Okay.
And if you have a menstrual cup in or even a tampon in, if you're constantly, if the pressure is not being managed properly throughout the day, then that pressure would contribute to the descent of
your cup.
Yeah.
Again, I guess people just have to go to their pelvic floor therapist and find these
1,000%
things out.
Yeah.
Okay. So forgive me for the silliness of some of these questions, but I honestly am just so curious. Okay. So one of the things that I noticed was a huge shift in, like, I don't know if it's just aging or if it's from giving birth, but like queefing.
Mm-hmm.
Never had it before. Mm-hmm. Have children. Now it's like a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not like in yoga. Like, I know that it's like a normal thing and stuff like that. But part of me was like, it happens like after sex or like all these different things. But I'm like, is that normal? Is that like, I shouldn't even say normal, but like, is that okay? Is that just something that's going to happen? Or is that like an indicator of something?
Well, it can
not
happen.
Sounding like a squeaky toy in the bed. Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, is that something that should be addressed?
Yeah. It can be an indicator of what it is it's air that's trapped in the vagina. And when that pressure, when we're talking about, so sometimes it happens, you know, as you just said, after sex, or if you move in bed or you try to get up out of bed, that can create intra-abdominal pressure.
Okay.
And again, if there's air trapped in there and then there's an increase in pressure, it's like it's blowing out, right? Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, it totally does.
So it can become more common if you don't have as much control in your pelvic floor.
Okay.
So not necessarily, again, it's not saying that there's not enough tone.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that there's more tone than's needed. And that, again, it doesn't have the ability to contract enough to manage that.
Right.
So there are some people who, like, I always come back to it to say, some people like queefing and some people, it doesn't bother queefing that they queef. For other people are like, I really don't want to queef.
Me, but whenever it happens, I'm like, why did that happen? Like, what just happened there? Like, it just feels very like sudden. And I just remember during a time that I used to be so ashamed of it because I was like so young and so foreign to my body. I just remember it being like a very sudden thing. Like suddenly this was happening and I was like, why the heck am I getting so much air trapped inside of me? What's going on? And it seemed to be right after giving birth. I had never experienced that before. So I wasn't sure if that was like actually a side effect of, you know, that traumatic birth experience, if it was something that, you know, I live with forevermore.
And in your case, so you have had an episiotomy twice. You have
once. I had one and then a tear once.
And tear. Okay, sorry. Yeah. So
no,
scar tissue from both of them.
Yeah.
And what happens with scar tissue is it's a normal response to healing and we need it to happen and we need those adhesions. It's part of normal. But they can get sticky or stuck and they can interfere sometimes with the ability of the muscles to contract and relax in a balanced way. So when I was talking earlier about assessing tone, if there is scar tissue and you said you had it down on one side, then potentially that side might not contract the same as the other side. And so there would be an imbalance in that Kegel contraction. And so when something like, you know, air is trapped and then you move in a way where all of a sudden the floor usually responds to that intra-abdominal pressure by a gentle contraction. Yep. But if it's not doing it in a balanced way, then it can contribute to a queef happening. Does that make sense?
That makes so much more sense. Yeah. It's also very funny watching you talk about this because I wish other people could see what you're doing, because every time you talk about like a Kegel, you do like the hand gesture of what a Kegel would look like in a vagina. And like every time you're talking about like the exam part, you've got your like two fingers as if it's an exam. And I'm just like sitting here like
animated.
Yeah, you're very animated. It's very fun. Let's talk about sex, because I saw in one of your posts, you were talking about pelvic floor, Kegels in general, actually helping us with our sex lives. And this is the thing that I think is the biggest devastation to womankind, is that we don't orgasm during sex. Not only that, but a lot of women don't know how to orgasm. They're not in tune with their body. I will fully admit it was like 3 years before I ever experienced one during sex. I mean, that was like such a foreign thing for me. And a lot of it came down again to that shame around my body, that not knowing my body, that feeling like it was almost like taboo or wrong to like touch yourself or have anything like that. And now as time's going on, I'm realizing that the more I understand my body, the better sex is. Mm-hmm. However, I've never known that like pelvic floor and Kegels could actually enhance sex.
Totally.
How does that happen?
So, well, next time you have sex, try some Kegels.
And during it?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Because
he won't
you
be
can
like,
use.
What are you doing?
He'll be like, what are you doing? And
okay.
Keep doing it.
It's
no, but
my
you can use your
turbo, whatever we call it.
It's my super vagina.
It's my super vagina.
My superhero. Yeah. So using a partner, whether it doesn't matter if they're male or female, or if it's a penis or a toy or fingers, but that can be good biofeedback. So for people who are learning, again, here's my hands, but if you are learning how to do your Kegels and you have something to squeeze against and try to draw into you, then that can be helpful for you from a training perspective. But they can also give you the feedback of, yeah, I can totally feel that. And
interesting.
So that's one piece of it. So it can be something that can enhance your sensation as well as your partner's. Mm-hmm. But also pelvic floor muscles that have a good amount, like an optimal amount of tone, who they're not super stuck or tight and they're not completely lax, they have more, their ability to sense better, I guess is what I'm saying. And so it goes in line with the body. Like when you're in bed or wherever you're having sex and you're worried about, you know, do I look fat? Do I smell? Yeah. You know, all the things that go through your mind, you're not relaxed, you're not in the moment, and that can impede lubrication, and it may contribute to muscles being a little bit less likely to relax. Yeah. And that, again, the mind, but also the body can interfere then with your sensation. And if you can be in the moment and allow the muscles to respond how they would, like just let them do their job rather than us kind of getting in the way.
I do find that the way that we think about ourselves and our body and that self-consciousness and that loss of confidence, it does strip us of our true intimacy with somebody and understanding like that enjoyment and that need to like relax. Like I've read all the stuff in terms of like why foreplay is so important and like what actually happens to the female body that actually will allow yourself more chances to have come to orgasm and stuff. But not only that, I do have a question, because when you orgasm, your vagina does clench. Like it almost does
a super Kegel. That's the superhero Kegel right there.
Okay. So that's why, like, so doing that during sex and then allowing yourself. So if you have a stronger or more exercised vagina, then is it making your orgasm stronger?
Yes.
What?
There's your motivation.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yes.
This is wild. And does it increase your chances of orgasm?
I would say yes. I would say yes, but there's lots of other things that can play a part in that. But I would say yes, because if you have a sort of optimally functioning pelvic floor,
yes,
and you know, the less tone, your sensation might not be as heightened, and too much tone, you might be uncomfortable or painful. So if your tone is kind of in that optimal range and you're just in the moment and you're, then I would say yes.
Okay.
And so getting you to the optimal range can sometimes mean exercising your pelvic floor and getting it working.
That makes sense. And you know what? I just signed up. I have your challenge right now. I have your 28-day Kegel challenge. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. So my philosophy is always movement-based.
Okay.
And I don't believe in Kegels at every red light or, you know, just while you're brushing your teeth, you know, the things that we've always heard you're supposed to do. Because it's better than nothing, and bringing awareness to your pelvic floor throughout the day, if that's the only time you get to do it, better than nothing.
Yep.
However, that sitting, usually in a posteriorly tilted position, which is not always, usually in a posterior tilt, our pelvic floor is actually a little bit shortened, and we sit a lot in the day, so it's usually kind of in that stuck position. And again, if we had a short, tight muscle, like holding grocery bags on our arm, and then if I did more bicep curls, that's like doing more Kegels with a short, tight, and it just kind of works the muscle opposite to what it actually needs. It needs more lengthening. So if you're sitting at every red light doing it, not only is your position not optimal, but it's not training your pelvic floor to respond to lifting a suitcase or lifting a car seat with your baby or bags of groceries or all the things that we do dynamically
our life
through
stuff,
the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my 3C approach is Kegels need to be done correctly, they need to be done consistently, and they need to be done coordinated with movement. And I created an online program that was kind of like a DIY with education and exercise, and people liked it, but they still wanted the daily reminders, and they still wanted something to kind of get them in that routine.
I didn't even know there was like proper position.
Yeah.
I am learning.
You're going to learn so much in this challenge.
No kidding.
So the challenge really came about is to app-based. So again, most people are 99% of people are on their phones all day. So it gives you the daily reminder to do it. It gives you the instruction how to do it. So each day you have five things. Two of them are the down training, as I call it. So the relaxation and the learning to let go. And then three of the exercises are the up training. So learning to contract and lift, because we need the balance of both. And, you know, you're not sitting at a red light. You're doing things like squats and lunges and bridges and all sorts of movements that you do through the day, but you're just doing them with a pelvic floor awareness or intention.
Oh, that's really cool. So you can kind of integrate it like that. Yeah. Cause I think that's, I can be honest, I don't think that I've ever done a Kegel like during an exercise. I think I've done it like most people do, where it's like when you think about it, or, you know, as many as you can when you're brushing your teeth or those types of things. So it's interesting to know that it can be done like a different way. And I'm so fascinated that it could actually, you know, I didn't know that so many things could truly be healed by this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How long a day does somebody typically, when you're doing one of these challenges, how many minutes a day would it normally take to run through?
It's like 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh, it's pretty quick.
It's pretty quick. It depends. Like, there's a couple of the release exercises that you might stay there for a few minutes almost, but most of them, 5 to 10 minutes. And people like the reminders, and they like the, there's points associated with it. And after you've checked something off, you get a satisfying ding and a green, like you're complete. And people love that sort of self-motivation and reassurance. And so it incorporates some gamification in there and motivation. There's a group chat so people can ask questions, and I'm coaching them along the way. If they're like, I can't do this with this, I don't have a ball, what's my modification? Or this hurts my knees, what other way could I do this? So I'm kind of coaching along the way as well. And when you reach certain point levels, you unlock bonus content that's like other education.
Fun.
And so it's fun. It's engaging. And
your Instagram is really fun and educational too. I heard that you have had some troubles getting on Facebook with some of these, with some of your posts, which is so funny because I'm like, there's nothing offensive or even like scandalous about your stuff. Where are you standing with now in terms of like that social media part of it and it being like now accepted to have like, you friggin' have like a puppet of a vagina. Like, I don't even get it.
It's downstairs right now.
I'm going to take a picture with it.
No. So what happened with Facebook, it wasn't that they were not allowing my posts. It's that originally, so my legal business name is what my page was. So it's Pelvian Wellness. And and when I was, so 3 years ago, again, I was kind of transitioning the brand and Vagina Coach, when I tried to change the name, they said it was inappropriate. It was not a term that was used. So I tried many times over the last few years. And then recently the regulations have changed slightly. Like, there are other vagina pages on there. And what I needed to do it almost in a kind of a step-by-step process that eventually eliminated the Pelvian part. And just, so anyway, long story short, it is now Vagina Coach.
You're now Vagina Coach.
Yeah.
Congrats.
And on Instagram and Facebook, I've made it.
Now, how has it been? You are a mother of teenage boys. And I believe in this so hard because I have two girls and then I have a boy. And, you know, it's been so interesting watching him grow up in this kind of female dominated environment where even, you know, when I was a single mom, it was just us three girls and one boy. So I really liked to talk about things because I didn't want my kids to feel shame around stuff. My mom tried to do this with me too, like no fault of her own. I just was like a very embarrassed kid. Mm-hmm. And then as I grew up, I got less so, and I really wanted to empower my kids to have normal conversations. I think I'm like half winning. One of them's a little bit more cautious than the other, but my son is so curious and so interested. And, you know, like when I was talking to the girls about their periods, he was like, can I also try this stuff? Like he wanted to see like the leak-proof underwear and stuff, just like the girls. And I thought this is exactly how it should be. And, you know, I'm so grateful I have a husband now who is not weirded out by vagina conversations.
Totally.
Not weirded out by like us having conversations about my period or even discharge and like normal stuff.
Yep.
But a lot of guys are. And I realize that a lot of it comes from all the way down from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And this like rooted in like, it's shame, it's taboo, like let's not talk about it. And I think oftentimes we think, oh, that really sets women up for failure, but it actually sets men up for failure too, because they're losing out on those same levels of intimacy with women. So how have your boys kind of like adapted to kind of being comfortable in this, like what has been societally uncomfortable for so long?
Yeah. Well, they didn't really have a choice.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah. But I 1,000% agree with what you're saying. And that, and if we in this generation, mm-hmm. as ourselves can start to become comfortable with these conversations and start to understand and normalize talking about it, not taboo, yeah. then that translates to our children as well. And then they will grow up with a different experience. And so I have vulva puppets. I have pelvis. I have vulva necklaces. I've got all sorts of paraphernalia around the house.
I have a vulva mug. And my kids are like, is that illegal to have out in public? And I was like, oh, I will walk around in the neighborhood if you want me to.
Totally.
Like, yeah. I love it. I'm like, here's a clitoris and like, here's the labia. And like,
and secretly, they are so happy to have that knowledge.
Well, they know what it is.
Exactly.
Like now they actually haven't. I didn't even know that there was a third hole until mm-hmm. After I had children. Mm-hmm. It was actually because they put a catheter in and I was like, how can you put a catheter in? I guess it was during birth that I found out. How can you be putting a catheter in when I'm about to push out a baby? I was so confused.
Yep.
That's when I found out I had a third hole.
Yeah.
Like that's how unaware I was.
Yeah.
And blissfully unaware, I guess in a way, but as I've learned down the road is that, you know what, knowledge is power and you actually get to be an advocate for yourself. But I'm curious for a lot of people who are in situations where they're already in a relationship with somebody who's very uncomfortable about these things. How can we empower women, especially in terms of like self-love and touch and just understanding their own stuff, even with a partner who's maybe not comfortable about those things? Mm-hmm. Do you find that we're still kind of like working through women's, like, 'cause mm-hmm. I feel like I'm like past that phase, but I can imagine that women are still struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, absolutely are. And I remember when I started this 15 years ago and we Instagram wasn't around.
Yeah.
Facebook was still very much a personal thing. There was really nothing business. The only kind of business platform that was being used was Twitter. Yeah. And so that's kind of where people were starting to reach out. And I remember, you know, putting in the terms pelvic floor and even learning like what the hell's a hashtag and going hashtag pelvic floor and seeing who was talking about it. And that was kind of the first conversation starter.
Yeah.
But in the last, especially like say 5 years or so, 3 to 5 years, the conversations around pelvic floor has exploded. The number of people talking about it is, which is amazing.
It's amazing.
And now more people are informed and now more people, instead of people saying, I've never heard of pelvic floor physio, they're saying, oh yeah, I've heard about it. I follow this person or this, or that's how I found you because somebody told me. And so it's getting out there more and it is becoming more talked about. There are still people that they're, for whatever reason, there's many different influences in their lives that maybe they're reluctant mm-hmm. To talk or reluctant to seek help. And that's fine. The beauty of social media is it's there. Kind of like what you're doing with your page is that people connect to what you've gone through, what you are going through, whatever, and they can learn. So you're in a very different place now than you were, but there are some people who are in the place where you were and 100%. You are supporting them through that. And it's the same thing happening in these conversations as well. So it is heads and tails above where it was. And yes, there's still room to improve. There's a lot of room to improve and more places to go kind of thing. But I'm thankful for the awareness that's being created and the communities that are happening now where women can go and feel like I have a private Facebook group called Box Talk. So when it's private and people can come in and they can ask questions. And there's knowing that everybody in there has been pre-approved with, and they're dealing with common things. And then they can, you know, not just hear from me, but hear from other people that are struggling. So they know they're not alone.
Because not everybody has those situations where they can bounce off ideas, even with their girlfriends, or like not everybody has those same experiences. Not all vaginas are the same. All vaginas are good vaginas. But like, I was literally the girl that even went and like, there was a page at one point, I don't know how many years ago, where it just showed all different women's labias and not in a pornographic way, but in a way that showed you that labias were normal, because think for so much, many of us, and I follow so many pages like that now. And that's why I love what you're doing so much in terms of the social media side of it, because I just remember that feeling of aloneness and feeling like my vagina looks weird or my vagina is gross. And like these weird little tidbits of information or these images that kind of show you that they're all so diverse and so different and so beautiful in different ways. And there's not really like one right vagina out there.
No.
And it's actually just really changed my whole perspective in terms of like how I feel about my body and just like even my confidence around it all. Right. So like, I can't even remember the last time I was like, oh, I'm like, I even have like there was a stitch after Bowden was born that like didn't actually heal the spot. So I'm like, I always call it my trick labia, but like that used to devastate me. I was so like ashamed of it. And now I was like, oh, it's my trick labia. It's like what happened during birth. Right.
Totally.
So, I mean, you kind of get to normalize these things. So I think it's really cool that you have that. I think it's really amazing that you have a community where people can kind of tap into it, because I think we all know not everybody has those support systems, which is the freaking power of social media, man.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And
it's
the confidence piece is a big one that you just mentioned, that it's the media tells us that light bladder leakage is just part of being a woman.
And they sell products to help it. Like, and that's great. Those things should exist. I think we don't, we shouldn't just have to pee ourselves until we're better.
Exactly.
However,
there's help, and that should be a temporary measure.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be something that the impression is that it's just something that you have to just be like, oh, well, I'm a woman and it happens and I just need to accept it and I need to wear pads for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so they play a role, 1,000% agree, but I would love it if the messaging could be more around your confidence doesn't have to come by masking a symptom, that confidence really comes from actually addressing the problem, and that it is very, very treatable and it's very, very common. You're not the only one dealing with it, but use this while you're seeking help and then you won't have to wear pads for the rest of your life. Because that's where the true confidence, I call it core confidence, comes from, is when you can go to your exercise class and do a jumping jack and know that you're okay and you don't have to have your pad in. Or, you know, it consumes so much of your thought when you're constantly putting a pad in, or you laugh through the day and you know that you've just leaked and you know.
And I think that that's so important too, because I've literally gone up to fitness instructors and said, hey, just so you know, if there's any jumping in the class, I can't do that part. Just know that I'm okay. It's just that I have like bladder leakage issues. And I've never had a fitness instructor say to me, no problem, maybe go get your pelvic floor checked. It literally was one of my followers that was the one who said it after I jokingly said something about it. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think confidence does come with information. I think knowledge is power, and we need to use it more and more. And that's exactly why I'm like truly so excited that we're having this conversation. But I want people, I realize that we're like, this is the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we're literally, it's been like 49 minutes. And I want people to get to know what you're doing. I want them to empower themselves. I want them to feel confident about their vaginas and, you know, do a proper Kegel and all of those things. Where can they find you? How can they start tapping into your community? Because I absolutely love what you're doing.
Thank you. Likewise. The vaginacoach.com, or not the, but vaginacoach.com is kind of my main website. Okay. If you are pregnant, you can check out belliesinc.com as well.
Oh, nice.
There's on Vagina Coach, I have resources for pregnant or non-pregnant people.
Yeah.
Belly's Inc is definitely very much focused on the pregnant population. But Vagina Coach is kind of the online presence that I have, social media as well as the website. And you can find the 28-day challenge there. Also the other programs that I have if you're interested, or the coaching. So I do one-on-one coaching with women as well.
And that's so lovely.
So I'm really, really grateful for you for having me and helping me get the message out, because I think that, well, of course, I want more women to hear about it. I'm really, really excited that you're joining the challenge and looking forward to your thoughts.
This is like a total culmination of things, because people always tell me that papayas look like vaginas, and I completely agree.
Totally.
So this is the perfect little partnership moment. We're having our papaya vagina power moment, and we're all going to go get our, I don't know, what are we going to call our superpowered vaginas? But we'll come up with a name, and it's going to be powerful, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. I'm really excited for people to get to know you. And hope you guys check out Vagina Coach on Insta, on her website. Go find all the things. Go get your vagina power. And we will talk to you next week.
Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of The Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.